In the Booth with Matt Park is brought to you by Hoffman Sausage Company.
Maybe I could be like an announcer, like a columnist.
I don't believe what I just saw!
You know how I always make those interesting comments during the game?
Personally, I think we got hosed on that call.
Yeah, you make good comments.
So what about that?
Well, you know, they tend to give those jobs to ex-ball players and people that are, you know, in broadcast.
What about a talk show host?
This is In the Booth.
Talk show host, that's good.
I think I'd be good at that. I talk to people all the time.
With Matt Park.
Hey, here we go. Another of these weekday games has us in the confusing mode. Still hard to follow Coach Pasqualoni's words. Today definitely does feel like a Monday, but this week, Friday is Saturday, so
it's Tuesday.
It's about to change in the next couple of days. No, this feels like a Monday. This is a Monday.
In Coach P's world, it's also Tuesday.
But tomorrow can be Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Friday, of course, Saturday.
I think Coach did it
then
the whole
Saturday
way
around. Saturday will be Saturday. And then Sunday can be Sunday, and then on into
I think the listeners are going to be very happy when this week is over.
Yes.
That our 2.5 straight weeks of breaking this down will be over, but we're not done yet.
Just go right in. I'll tell you, though, last Friday,
it
definitely didn't feel like a Friday. Because you're coming off the game, which was Saturday on a Thursday, and then you went back into another Friday that didn't feel like a Friday, and then the weekend. But today... Definitely feels like a Monday. Wow. So
well, we got that solved.
Yeah. So headed to a Friday night football game. We'll have a bunch of particulars over the course of the week to get ready for that one against Pitt. We'll have Paul Carcaterra, former Syracuse lacrosse star, and now a sideline reporter for ESPN on the show throughout the week. Adam Terry, of course, in his regular spot. Hope to talk baseball as well. The baseball series have been great so far, and for those locals that, for various reasons, are desirous of a Yankees-Nationals World Series, which would be a blast, the Nationals are actually holding up their end of the bargain a bit better than the Yankees right now. Could both be ahead 2-0 and 2-0 on the road, but both of those teams obviously are in very good shape. Astros winning late last night with an extra inning home run, so the Yankees come home in that series 1-1. Nats are home tonight against the Cardinals, up 2-0.
Seth dropped a little nugget last hour that no team in an LCS that had won the first two on the road has ever lost the series. So feeling pretty good for the Nats right now, you know, especially considering that they're starting only all-star pitchers.
Yeah, they have awesome starting pitchers.
That also helps.
Their bullpen not strong, though, over the course of the year. And if you think about... If you think about bullpen in terms of holding on, well, that's the position they are in a grander scale, trying to hold on for this series with a lead. So that'll be interesting to watch. Dino Babers' Monday press conference, that's why it feels like a Monday. We will have some highlights of that as we get into the program as well. You can join us by phone at any time, 315-437-7644, 315-4-ESPN-44. Tommy's on the controls. Brian Higgins is here as always, and guests on the show appear on the Burdick Toyota guest line. A bunch of different things to jump into, Brian, about the weekend in review. You know, that Thursday night game hit hard. Ran into a bunch of people in the community since then, and it really resonated with people. I think people led themselves to believe that it was going to be some sort of slam dunk to go down to NC State and win that game. Either that, or they're disappointed beyond the score, but by the offense struggling to move the ball or whatever. But I felt like I got it from a lot of corners. More reaction. There was nothing to react to the previous two games. Nobody said anything about the Holy Cross or Wake for Western Michigan, or for that matter, Clemson. Nobody said anything about any of those games. This one has hit home.
And more reaction to that loss than any similar loss, I think, in the last, what, decade or longer? Just because people didn't have the expectation of the win in that situation, I guess, and that's last year. It's everything. It's the offseason. It's the hopes and the expectations, and okay, you still got to get one back for the Maryland loss, and it's all of those things, and none of that actually made the game any easier. And it's what we said last week. Had this game gone the other way, all those conversations would have been in Raleigh, because someone was coming out of the game feeling like this, I think, because they thought they were going to win the game. And their fan base thought they were going to win the game, and it was the exact same thing on the other side of the coin as an NC State program that's had success in recent years and had graduated a veteran quarterback. And their story is very similar in recent vintage to Syracuse's story. So for that reason, it was interesting. And again, will it be any different on Friday night? Pitt, they're in a position where they kind of, you know, they're playing well, but, you know, they need to win a game to keep it moving and have a chance in the Coastal Division, which they won last year and all that. And Syracuse needs to win because all the same reasons as last week. So it's going to be the same tale on Saturday, be it here or in Pittsburgh.
And I'm here to tell you, I think Syracuse wins this game Friday night.
And so don't go hang out in Pittsburgh on Saturday.
Right. But I also don't think, like, after it, if you jump to conclusions like, hey, wow, everything's great. No, I'm standing by what we said the last couple weeks. Every game the rest of the way is going to be a flip of a coin. I mean, there's slight differences, but I'm saying Syracuse has between a 45 and 55% chance of winning every game the rest of the way. And, you know, I like their chances slightly better, let's say, against Boston College at home than I do at Duke, for instance, or whatever. But no game the rest of the way, either result would surprise me. And let's just hang on for the ride, because that's what we're looking at here. This is a Pitt team that is going to come in on a three-game winning streak, all tight games. They've won by a total of seven over those past three games. And on a string where Syracuse Pitt in the Dome, three or four times running now, has been a real tight game.
Or a field goal in this series recently in the Dome has constituted a blowout. I mean, there were one-point games. I mean, these games have been grinders and right down to the end.
Dino Babers said today one of the things in his press conference, it's not among the quotes that we're going to share for you here in a minute. You know, the Pitt games seem memorable. Now, he has a very good memory. As Coach Boeheim has a second-to-none memory about games and twists and turns. But for Coach Babers, he's saying, hey, look, when Syracuse and Pitt are together, typically it's very close, and you can remember the plays and the outcomes of those games, maybe better than others, and certainly we'll be digging up through some of that over the course of this week. Not a ton in college football. There's not always a ton of follow-up one year to the next, or carryover, I guess is a better choice of words, that somebody that had a big game last year is going to be back to make an impact. When Eric Dungy was the guy who made a lot of your impact for the last couple of years, he's gone now, so Syracuse in a lot of ways is starting from scratch. You look at Sean Riley and Nyheim Johnson, they ran all over the field against NC State last year and then weren't really factors in the game on Thursday night. Pittsburgh last year had two 1,000-yard rushers and had no difficulty running the ball against the Cuse.
Yeah, both of them, was it Darren Hall, they both had 100 yards in the game last year.
Yeah. And Hall had three touchdowns.
And basically the end of the game when Pitt scored the last field goal to tie it and then won it in overtime, they didn't need to pass the ball anymore. They had ceased doing that. They had two running backs, and that's what it was. And those two guys are gone, and that's what it was. And that game last year was in many ways about the good and bad of Eric Dungy. He was great at points, and some things went awry, and that's what that game was, with a bout of thunder and lightning. And all three of those things will not be in the Dome on Friday night. It's completely different. It's not the 76-61 from a couple of years ago. And at the same time, why won't it be close again? There's no reason to think that it won't be a close game. It was not that many years ago. What was it? 14, 13, 17, 16, something, where basically Aaron Donald was the point difference all by himself. And these games are all so different, but they're all so tight because they have so many guys like that, I feel, that are making plays to win these games.
That's right. So that game is Friday night, 7 o'clock. The Florida State game, which is the one after that, kick time was announced today. That is 3:30 on October 26th, the Saturday in Tallahassee. So we'll be back with Dino Babers and work through some of his press conference discussion topics for you here in just a bit on the show. The show is brought to you, as you know, by Hoffman Sausage Company. And last week we had Becky and Pat in to promote Saturday night's event. And that was a good time. Kind of a quote-unquote upscale tailgate Saturday night at the Dome. And several hundred people there, and we had dinner on the floor of the Dome, and they'd set up the stage at the far end and use the video board for kind of a slideshow, the history of the Hoffman Sausage Company. You know, local people coming over from Germany, obviously, family-owned for generation after generation. Started out near the ballpark out on Hiawatha Boulevard, and a great success story, and they whipped up sausages and hot dogs in ways that you haven't seen before. So that was an enjoyable time. We thank Hoffman for having us out. And Lord willing, the hot dogs that they brought us last week are still in the fridge in the break room, because I'm going to need to take those.
That's true. We did stash them there. That'll be a good test of the system.
That's right. We'll see. When you deal with enough of these wacky morning DJ scoundrels, radio scoundrels, the chance that anything survived there for more than
you're
a couple
days. You're going to have a hot dog thief or two in the crew.
That's right. Is a question mark, but hopefully we can get back in there and get to those Hoffman hot dogs. Born in Germany, raised in Syracuse, and we found out all of that is true in great detail at their gala for the Onondaga Historical Association Saturday night. So that was a good time. When we come back, we'll get into Dino Babers and his thoughts today, including kind of a low-key shot, I think he took there, a little claim. He didn't make a huge deal of it, but kind of threw it out there. We'll get into that as we roll along on the show in a moment. This is In the Booth on ESPN Radio.
In the Booth with Matt Park is brought to you by Hoffman Sausage Company.
And we're back on the show. Good to have you along with us. You can join us by phone at 315-437-7644. If you've got a firing, flaming hot take you'd like to share on the program, or a flame for those hot dogs that we have in the fridge. We could use that just as easily. In fact, better. If you'd like to get into that, the Orange and Pitt Friday night in the Dome. With it being a Friday game, because this week Friday is Saturday, then what is Thursday? Wednesday is Thursday. Mm-hmm. So we will have the Dino Babers show on Wednesday night out at Press Room Pub. So adjust your schedules accordingly. Coach Babers today dusted off a quote that he's used before. I like this concept, kind of what he's getting at. When you're looking at building a team and getting out of maybe a rut, if you didn't like the way things were, and certainly offensively the Orange didn't perform Thursday night at NC State, how are you going to get out of it? And one of the things he's always going to come back to as a solution is veteran players, your best players. And you hope to have enough of them that they represent a larger part of the team. And while in theory, as you recruit, you're getting better and better younger talent in the program, it's still got to be the older and longer participants in your program. They're going to be the ones that lift you out of a tough spot.
The one thing that we need to do, I've talked to you guys about game 4-6. We're going to find out where we're at. We're at game 6, okay? We know where we're at. And I think the big thing here is this. Everybody has a responsibility to get better. This is not throwing any O-line, anybody. This is the entire football team, coaches included. Everybody has a responsibility to get better. And you're not allowed to stay the same. And so what does that mean? Well, when you start off as whatever, and I don't like saying that word, excuse my language. If you start off as a sophomore that's never played, after 6 games, you're not a sophomore anymore. You're a salty guy getting ready to go into his junior year. If you've played 6 games as a freshman, even though you're still a freshman, 6 games as a freshman, your play should be improved based off of how much you've been on the field. We need to get better. And what normally happens with football teams at this stage of the game is that everyone looks at their young players. Well, your young players should be developing, but you have to lean on your older players. So my thing is, we need our older players. Our best players have to be our best players. They have to play well. And then the other guys are just coming, okay? The little brothers are just coming. The big brothers, they have to play well. And I think that's where the emphasis is. The big emphasis is going back and making sure we're getting the production out of the people that should really be producing for us, because they've had a lot of game experience.
And we'll obviously talk about the quarterback. The quarterback of those two categories right now, he's a younger brother.
Yep.
You know, he is not playing. People want to say, well, you had experience last year. Yeah, that doesn't really count for a whole lot. It's better than nothing, but it's not significant enough for him to feel as though he's made it this year. And he does have leadership qualities, Tommy DeVito, but he's not currently the leader or in the top leadership group on this team.
I'd say that in many ways, it's the same thing that Jim Boeheim's been telling us for 40 years. Well, why don't you play 15 guys? Well, Tyus Battle's better at basketball. He's going to play the game because he's better. Dino's not putting out second string guys just hoping some freshman randomly does something good because it is a possibility.
In fact, we've pointed out freshmen who we thought we saw in practice that looked good. They haven't played at all. Courtney Jackson hasn't played at all. Juwan Jordan's had two carries or whatever. Anthony Quealy's barely played.
For 2 years.
Yeah.
And, hey, Dino's, these are the guys who are good. If they don't play well, we lose. What else? There's nothing else to that sentence. Right. Like, the good players have to play well. And that was a question that was specifically started about the offensive line. So he was alluding to that as well, which would be Aaron Service and Evan Adams. Not that they've been playing poorly. It's always hard to single out one guy in an O-line. But throughout the whole team, if your veteran guys, if Sean Riley's not going to catch a bunch of balls, if Mo Neal isn't going to run for a bunch of yards, if your veterans on defense don't play well, and they did last game, which is why he had a chance to win. That's why Syracuse had a chance to win last game, because their best defensive players, Kendall Coleman, Alton Robinson, played great, and you had a chance to win the game. That's what he's saying on the other side of it. You just didn't get enough of that from the offense.
Yeah, and if the defense plays like it did Thursday night,
you're going to win most of your
games. You're going to win a lot of games, and you just hope that that travels and that that is consistent from 1 week to the next. I think the offense inherently plays better when it comes home. NC State's offense was home the other night, and they weren't good. Light anything on fire either. So that game, you know, over time, and again, you just can't get it back in the same way you can't get the Maryland game back. But because the team that plays better on any given night the rest of the way, there are going to be the opportunities to put those games in the rear view and still get you to about what was reasonable to expect all along here. As for DeVito, he's always a topic of discussion when Coach Babers is in front of the media, and DeVito returning home here for this situation. That was his first ACC road start Thursday at NC State. We'll see if he's better off for it as he comes home to take on Pitt Friday night.
I don't think it's necessarily that. The things that I tell him in those situations is kind of like, you want immediate feedback on certain situations because you want to be able to put a picture in his head that he doesn't forget. So whether it's a particular play, a particular defense, a particular coverage, maybe something that a DB saw, something a DB did that's really unique. When I grabbed him on the sidelines, did you see this right here? I did. What did you think that was? This is what I thought it was. You're exactly right or you're wrong. It's this. Remember that picture. This is how you got to remember that picture. And that's the things that you're going to have to do to give him the foundation so that he can be able to do it all when that comes, whether that's the end of this year, next year. You got to keep putting those memories and those pictures in his head so he'll have stuff to reflect back on.
We talked about this during the games, Brian. I like the way this staff rolls. It doesn't mean that the other way is wrong. I think what we're more used to seeing is the light up the guy that does something wrong. And that's more common. That's not just here at Syracuse. That's not an indictment of Babers' predecessors or whatever. That is the default position of the coach. Okay. What were you possibly thinking? Blah, blah, blah. We went over this. What this staff tends to do, you don't really see a lot of that bluster originally, but it's not an accident that mistakes are dealt with immediately by this group.
Well, it's been really interesting to watch. Well, coach for 4 years, because that, what you're saying, game one, year one was, what's this guy doing? He's just kind of
taking
it all in.
He's
got a standing there, huh? That's interesting. And it became very interesting to observe, because when he does pop off, which is rare, or get mad, you're like, he must really be mad about something, as opposed to others where they're mad about everything. So you don't even know what they're mad about. Like when Dino's mad about something, you're like, something must have happened. We got to go figure out what he's mad about, because it's probably important, because it's two or three times a game, maybe. And it's this last game, it was, some of the calls that didn't go Syracuse's way, and he's upset, and rightly so. When he talks to DeVito coming off the field, very interesting. He mentioned it a few weeks ago, the idea of when he even got here with Dungy, and even though it was a different offense, Dungy already had a year. So I think even some of this stuff he's telling DeVito has nothing to do, I mean, it always does a little, with this offense as it does with offense and reading a defense and football in general, which Eric, and maybe we didn't see these conversations as much with Eric because he already had them with Tim Lester the year before. And, okay, that's what the single high safety or, you know, whatever. Did you see the zone over here? They were playing man, stuff like that. He had seen it, so Dino didn't have to have that. He's talking to Tommy, I'd say at least significantly, at least after half the drives, and that might be undershooting it. And I find it interesting because they're calm conversations. They stand there and they talk, and Tommy talks to him. It's not a one-way street, and it's kind of interesting. You obviously can't hear him, but to see that going on in real time during the game, I find it very interesting about Dino, how quickly he is able to analyze it and then transfer that information along to Tommy and then hopefully to improve or work on whatever it was that just happened.
Well, the quarterbacks have to slow the game down, and in order to slow it down, you kind of need to see everything and recognize, okay, I've been here before, and get your bearings and really understand what defenses are trying to do and how your offense works within that and what are the adjustments and the open avenue. You know, in order to get this offense at the tempo it's got to be at, right, you need to have multiple successful plays in a row. The idea of the setbacks coming with penalties or, you know, let's face it, the screen game is a big part of what they're trying to accomplish. If you throw a screen pass and it gets you 2 yards, that's not what the budget was for. You know, the budget was for 5 on first down, and that's going to keep you in a solid down and distance and keep you on track. And for a lot of this season, this team has not been blessed with the opportunity there to build that up. But confidence is a thing. Coach addressed that as well. And you can either build confidence and earn it the honest way, or you can fake it till you make it.
My confidence is good. I know that there might be some confidence lacking in other places, but my confidence is good. I'm glad that all the frost and all the fluff is gone. And we're really looking at where we're at. And I think this is where I get excited. Okay? We can either be what everyone says we are, or we can go out and prove them wrong and be something totally different. It's going to take a lot of work, because it's not like you can just flip that light switch. I mean, what you see is what we are right now. It doesn't mean we got to stay there. And I think the guys have put in 2 good days of practice, and they're ready to turn a new leaf. Hopefully we'll get to see that on Friday night.
Well, the leaves are falling. We're just about at peak foliage right now.
I hate to tell Dino about the frost, what's going to happen with that, but you kind of like a head coach that's singing like that. Whether you got to fake it or whatever, that, yeah, they didn't want to be 3-3 right now. They are. What now? Dino's very focused on what now? What next? It doesn't have to be another 3-3 at the rest of the season. And he said this after the game. There's a lot of the coin flip games the rest of the way. Somebody has to win them. Like they've just, because this one didn't go right, somebody's got to win these games. Why not go win some of these games? Somebody's going to. Like, Pitt's no better. Why do they got to win?
Right.
Syracuse might as well win it. That's Dino's thought. Well, we can win it. There's no reason why not.
Right. And we should really take his word for it and track all the teams that are 3-3 now. And
some of them are going to win some games.
Yeah. And some might win their conference. You know what I mean? And that's the way it can be. Now,
not this conference.
No, not this one. I'm not saying Syracuse is one of those, but it is what you make of it as you get to this point of the season, the nitty gritty of it and the idea that all of these games are to be competitive, which makes for good viewing for the rest of us. Now, here was, to me, the most interesting thing that was said in the press conference this morning, and it wasn't made a big deal of or wasn't brought about to be bombastic or incendiary in any way. It is a window into how football coaches and this one in particular think. And injuries have been an issue with this team as they are with all teams. So as a matter of routine, the media asks Dino Babers every week, hey, what's the status? And really we're talking about 4 injured players. Okay, you've got McKinley Williams, Andre Sisco, Ife Melifonwu on defense. Williams hasn't played. The other 2 have missed the last 3 games. Sisco dressed but did not play Thursday at NC State. And on offense, Sam Heckel has missed all but the first half of the first game of the year. So you're down 4 starters and have been for a while. So the obvious question is, are any of those coming back? And no reason based on anything he said today to think that any of those people will play against Pittsburgh. There's also no reason to think that Coach Babers will be forthcoming about anybody's injuries.
There's some stuff that's come out in the last 2 weeks that I think has been damaging our guys on the football field as far as their injuries. So I don't want to talk about this part or that part. It's we're watching on tape, and it seems like some of our guys are taking shots in particular areas, like people are reading press clippings, and they're going after certain spots on people. So I'm not going to start talking about where their areas are.
Okay, so and I'm not going to start talking about whether he's right or wrong. I mean, he obviously knows what he's looking at on the film. I just find that interesting. There's part of me that finds that that is far-fetched, but it's that he's just putting out there what has basically been presumed to be his position for a long time here. That's what coaches mean when they say they don't want to share stuff, and it's upper body and lower body. They think that because if they say John Smith has a left ankle injury, that John Smith's left ankle is going to get turned in the pile in the next game.
Well, we're just hoping the guys with these body injuries that have been out and haven't gotten back, been subject to it, hopefully they're back at some point. I mean, that's one of the other main things Dino's been talking about, that he's been hoping some of these guys would have already been back, and they're not. And you're just waiting and waiting, and it's got to be frustrating for the guys, for Dino, for everybody, that you want an Andre Cisco back out there. You want Bear Williams, who got hurt in camp, back out there. If you mail it fun. Well, that's three starters on defense, and we've talked about Sam Heckel and the offensive line. It's just it stinks to have to talk about it week in and week out when it's the same guys, and the guys thought they'd be back. Andre Cisco doesn't want to miss games. He thought he'd be back. He was on the trip. He was dressed. But that's part of it. There's got to be a frustration on all levels that these guys aren't on the field.
Absolutely. I think it affects everybody. It affects the player themselves, of course. It affects what the coaches are trying to do. It affects teammates. It affects the roles you have and that type of thing. And it's only really a positive for a couple of individuals, and those are the ones who see increased playing time. But at the same time, with guys like Antoine Cordy and Scoop Bradshaw, they were playing a little bit anyway. Yeah. You don't want them exposed in any way, because that does not strengthen the team. I have in my mind, though, this is not meant to call BS on Coach Babers or any football coach that would say that. I just have a little skepticism. I'm thinking, like, in baseball now, what do they do? They new batter comes up, and the scouting report's either in their pocket or in their cap, and they right. take it off. Oh, okay, we're supposed to pitch this guy low and away.
Hurt this guy's left ankle.
Yeah, quarterbacks, they have the wristband. So you're telling me that all 11 players on defense know that when John Smith turned his left ankle, they know that they're going to take the cheap shot at the left ankle? Or is that just happenstance? Or, you know, so I personally have not witnessed anything that would back up what his claim is here, but he certainly knows better than I, and he's watched more video than I have.
Quick nugget here, Matt, on what we said previously about 3-3 teams in this league. There's 14 teams in the ACC. 11 of them are either 3-3 or 4-2. 11. Georgia Tech stinks. Clemson's really good. Wake Forest was undefeated, and they lost one of these. They lost what shouldn't have been a toss-up game in their mind at Louisville the other day. So this league, besides, you're going to beat Georgia Tech, you're going to lose to Clemson, and the rest of you, we'll see out there.
It's still viable, right? Or was it just going into Saturday that all the coastal teams could wind up 4-4/3?
That's always still viable. Right. That's been viable for 15 years. Georgia Tech's 0-3. The rest of the coastal's either 2-1, 1-1, or 1-2 right now. Yeah. In league.
Wow.
It came close a few years ago where literally the entire coastal, if it was like two results happened differently down the stretch, the whole thing would have been 4-4.
That would be something. 7-way tie for first place or last place, depending on
7-way tie for third.
That's right. We look at the conference altogether. Okay, we'll be back with more as we continue here up until 3 o'clock today. Paul Carcaterra of ESPN to look ahead to the Syracuse-Pittsburgh game tomorrow on the show. Adam Terry later in the week. We also have tickets to give away to the Pitt game. We'll do that Wednesday on the program with another rousing rendition of Pick 6. You're listening to In the Booth, brought to you by the Hoffman Sausage Company on ESPN Radio.
Do we care?
Interesting.
I doubt it.
No, wait, the other thing. Tedious.
But we will do this segment anyway.
Don't care anymore. Don't care no more.
There was something in the London game yesterday morning that I have never seen or even heard before.
The fair catch free kick at the end of the first half completely blew my mind, and I'm sure it blew the London fans' mind as well, who didn't, most of them at least, don't really even know American football.
Sure. Well, the exciting thing, and I was watching at the time, first of all, it's a ridiculous broadcast setup. I thought they did as good a job with it as possible. In the booth, you have Rich Eisen, who does just a couple play-by-play games a year that happen to be in London, with Michael Irvin, Kurt Warner, Steve Mariucci in the booth, Melissa Stark on the sideline, and I think they may have even had Peter Schrager or somebody on the other sideline. That's how they did it last year, at least, in London. And, you know, it's a 9:30 live game, so you're watching that instead of the pregame show. And as it comes here at the end of the first half, 40-odd seconds, 50 seconds left, Christian McCaffrey runs out of bounds, and they're killing him. For why did they do that? Because you could have just let the final seconds expire here, and basically the Panthers wouldn't have had to punt. And McCaffrey himself seems to recognize it too late, and he's going, oh, my bad, I screwed up. Anyway, the Panthers do punt it away, and the Bucs don't do anything with it. Now they've got to punt it back because the Panthers must have had timeouts.
So that was not one of the five times Jameis threw an interception.
Correct.
Just to mark that down.
Correct. So the Bucs punt it back. Panthers,
three false starts on that punt, by the way.
Yes, back going back and back and back, yep. Right. So they're making a whole to-do about that. And then the punt happens, and it's fair caught, like right in the middle of the field on the NFL logo with 1 second
line.
Left in the half. The key being fair caught. And when you fair catch, you do have the right to attempt an immediate free kick. And I always knew that that was like an obscure rule in the book. If I've ever seen it before, I don't recall. Maybe it seems like somewhere along the line I've seen it once or heard about it once. But most American fans don't know that, let alone English fans, which is hilarious. So
they're still confused about the catching.
No,
at all.
Yeah, they
most of the time in that stadium, there's two people on the field that get to catch, and that's it.
They cheer the extra point more than anything else. So that's exciting. So now they're cutting the way it showed on TV was interesting because now they're just scanning the crowd, and there's all kinds of, you know, people explaining it to one another and huddling and confusion. And
they could have tried it. Nobody knew what was happening.
Right. So
could have played that game in Jacksonville. Nobody would have known
right.
what was happening.
So now the Panthers line up to kick, and it's basically the way you would kick it away if that's what you opted to do on a safety. But in this case, the ball's not at the 20. It's at midfield. So it's about a 60-yard stroke with no rush and no time, really. I mean, the time was not an issue because he's going to kick it. There's 1 second left.
Although it could be returned if it was short.
Yes, yes. And as it turned out, it was long enough by just a little bit. He just kind of missed it to the right. Otherwise, the Panthers would have stolen 3 points there, and then it would have been brilliant that Christian McCaffrey went out of bounds with 45 seconds left or whatever it was.
Did he get like a, you know how the kickers take a longer run up on a kickoff than an extra point? Did he really?
I don't think he really did.
Was it a normal field goal motion, or was he really taking a run at it?
My recollection is just kind of a couple steps and a real good pop. I mean, he didn't lack for distance on the kick, but it didn't really draw in for him either the way a lot of kicks do or good golf shots do. So he almost in my mind's eye kind of nonchalanted it a little bit, but
it was wide right off the foot. Yeah. It had enough foot, but it was missed right off the foot.
But it could
much.
Have been a steal of three and a really interesting story.
This is going to have to be a research project for later of why is this a rule in the first place from what has to be legitimately 100 years ago.
Archaic. Yeah.
Like what, I mean, sometime this made sense, and I'm intrigued to know why, and it was probably back in the 20s or something.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. It just seems conceivable that it could come up more often. You know, I would say Syracuse is a couple of players that if you're given a no-rush situation, I would think Andre Schmidt or Sterling Hoffrichter both could hit a 60-yard field goal.
But I'd say you could only, though, it only can conceivably kind of happen on either the last play. You have to be catching a punt with less than 8-7 seconds left in the half, or you need to be down within a field goal. And if you really want to get risky, it might not be the last play of the game. It's
well, you're saying, because why well, just settle for three? Right?
Well, if you fair catch the ball and kick a field goal from the 40 on a short punt in the middle of the third quarter, that's weird for one. And two, if you miss, you've just given the other team.
Yeah, I was going to say, it only puts you right back.
Like,
on
you don't
defense.
Get to kick the. It's not first down. You don't get second down.
Yeah, right. Right. But yeah, fun to watch and almost worked out great for the Panthers.
Do you think all NFL coaches know about this rule? Yeah.
And if they don't, trust me, they've got somebody who does.
They now do.
Well, all the way that these staffs are now. In fact, there's something they mentioned in the Bucs game. The Bucs have a former NFL official on their staff who not only tells Bruce Arians when to challenge, but how to explain it and what words to say and point out what the officials may have missed and speak in their language and that kind of thing. So the game management aspect of it, and Dino Babers thinks of himself, and I would agree, is a good understander of the clock and game management situations. Doug Marrone would rehearse those things. That you have to learn it, and pretty much everybody has somebody on their staff that's there to help the head coach do that.
All right, moving on here. Clemson, they've now fallen to third in the AP poll despite being undefeated. Alabama jumped them 2 weeks ago after Clemson just won by one at North Carolina, and LSU passed them this week after their win against Florida. Do you agree with that, even though Clemson hasn't lost?
I don't have a big problem with it at this point. I think number one should start the year, number one in that case, and you know, it's not impossible to fall. These other teams have looked really good, and Clemson certainly deserves to be way up there. They deserve to be in the top four. They've just looked a little rusty and haven't really been annihilating teams. So I'm not going to get too worked up about it here in middle of October.
I'd say this. If you're voting based on the preseason expectations, obviously it's weird. LSU, certainly what they did on Saturday night, they're the best team I've seen play so far this year. I don't know if that means they're better than Clemson or better than Alabama.
Beating Texas and Florida now.
Yeah, they beat Texas. They look great in that game. They beat Florida. They're just, Joe Burrow is just, they average 10 yards a play.
This is an LSU offense you've never seen before.
No, it's wild.
They're usually archaic.
And I just love Coach Orgeron. He cracks me up.
Great.
And I am very happy that he's having the success there because it is a perfect marriage of guy program and it going well. And if they can win the national title with him doing that, that's just great. But I'm also for anarchy in polls. I vote in the lacrosse poll. Obviously, less people pay attention to that than this. My poll from 1 week to the next week, who did I see that impressed me? Oh, you look great? Yeah, you might go up 10 spots. I mean, I don't care. It's just, it doesn't matter at the end of the year anymore at all. So why not? Do just put people up there that impressed you and look good that week. Why not?
Yeah, and if you're really making an honest assessment, then that's the way it should be. Yeah. It shouldn't be have sort of the arbitrary, well, you can only go up one or only down two.
Yeah,
or has
well,
to be
didn't
in
beat that team.
This spot. But great publicity with game day at Baton Rouge, and just tailgating is an entirely different level there. And they're making Gator and making a whole show of it.
Yeah. They cooked the Gator both to make fun of Florida and for lunch.
Right. And to
like,
eat that
they
gator.
Ate the gator.
Yeah. It was bacon wrapped, too.
I saw that one. Yeah, that was great.
Good.
I think that's how you want your gator. I don't think you want to be eating a lot of just normal, unseasoned gator. All right, back with the wrap of the show in just a moment. Will Muschamp's thoughts on words and dictionaries when we come back. In the Booth, ESPN Radio.
In the Booth with Matt Park is brought to you by Hoffman Sausage Company.
It says a lot about the culture of our program, the leadership of our program, the type of players we have in our program, and the future of our program.
Unfortunately, we don't have enough time left in our program to give a complete breakdown of the Will Muschamp program record. Brian, that's a great find. I watched that live. Tremendous. We'll get into it tomorrow.
Okay? I just almost fell off my couch when he programmed four times in 6 seconds. It was a beautiful thing.
That was a great win for the program, though.
It was better than their win.
They have won between the hedges. Back tomorrow, everybody. Paul Carcaterra. I'll be looking forward to talking football and Lax with Kark tomorrow at 2 in the Booth.